Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. I am joined in studio by Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here, Ed.
And Fred Jackson, News Director for American Family News and One News Now. Fred, good morning.
Yeah, where it's always hard to find something to talk about.
I mean, it's yes.
Just nothing happening in our world.
I just, at times, just moan and groan looking through the going through all the headlines. I am surprised today, though, as I was going through, it was all good news.
All good news?
All good news, all good things happening. Mm-hmm. The world is a right place once again.
You know,
have no idea how it has it always been this bad, or is it just because we have the internet that we know about it?
No,
that's the question.
I think from a biblical Christian point of view, even here in the Bible Belt, but here in this United States of America, I think we are witnessing great spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
And so we don't exaggerate things here.
Right.
I mean, not that we would have to get people's attention, but what is being said publicly out there and the attacks against biblical values, Christian values, the values upon which this country was founded upon, are under attack on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we don't have to really hunt for news anymore.
Right.
Like, it's thrown in our face every day.
Like a dump truck just backs up every day and just offloads it. Your mention of spiritual warfare, you know, Walker, today, I mean, that's appropriate. This is the National Day of Prayer. Mm. And, you know, these kinds of days can seem like just part of the nation's civic religion, and this is just something you do, like Memorial Day, and, you know, but I can't remember a time the last few years, and each year it seems to get even more desperate, a time in my lifetime when we so desperately needed prayer for this nation.
Yeah, that's right. And the National Day of Prayer, as Ed mentioned, is today, May 2nd. And what you can do, folks, and this is not a secular National Day of Prayer. This is a National Day of Prayer founded in the Judeo-Christian biblical worldview. And so that's what this is about. This is not to Allah or any kind of false gods. This is to the God of the Bible. NationalDayOfPrayer.org is the website. We've partnered with the National Day of Prayer for years on this. But if you want to find out a location near you, maybe if your city hall, if there's a gathering at your local city hall, you can visit NationalDayOfPrayer.org. And on that site, they have a search box where you can type in your zip code, find an event near you. And also, one other thing that we need to mention is post your pictures on Facebook. If you go to the National Day of Prayer event at your local town hall or your local city hall, post pictures of you praying with others on Facebook. Share it with everybody. Especially, you can share it with us on Today's Issues. We'll be glad to see that.
Right. So you can watch this show. We have a Facebook page and YouTube. You just go to either of those and search for Today's Issues. You can watch us here in studio. If you're of a mind to do that, I question why you would want to see us, but we're not particularly. Now, Walker's a good-looking young man, but Fred and I, we're frankly over the hill.
There you go.
You know, and
well, so, if I do look rough today, it's because I've been doing a 5 o'clock gig. I've been hosting Sandy Rios' show.
Yes, you have.
So I'm up at 5, and I'm usually waking up more like 6:45. So I've got my coffee in here, and so the train's rolling. But if I'm showing some lag, that's why.
The train's rolling, but you're not sure there's a conductor on board.
That's
is that
right.
What you're saying?
That's right.
All right, Fred. Let's go ahead. We might as well jump into it.
Yeah, political theater is on display in Washington, D.C. this morning. The House Judiciary Committee, which is under the control of the Democrats, its chairman is Jerry Nadler from New York, I think he is. Jerry Nadler?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, Fox and other networks did their duty for Jerry Nadler this morning, and their cameras showed an empty chair where Attorney General William Barr was supposed to be sitting this morning to undergo questions about how he's handled the Mueller report. Well, the reason the Attorney General is not there is because the Democrats told him that, along with getting questions from duly elected lawmakers, which is the way these committees are supposed to run, they were going to bring in lawyers, their lawyers, for extra questions to the Attorney General. Well, the Attorney General said, and he warned them that he wouldn't show up, he said, no, I'm not going to do that. Now, Sarah Sanders, White House spokesman Sarah Sanders, was asked about this morning, and she said it's pathetic. First of all, is it an admission by many of these Democrats who are lawyers that they are not smart enough to ask the questions, the right questions, to the Attorney General? Why would they need extra lawyers brought in to ask the questions that they want? But that's what it was going to be. It was going to be about theater. And we kind of had, you know, some insight into what was going to happen at this committee today. Yesterday, the Attorney General, William Barr, did show up at a Senate Judiciary Committee to talk about the Mueller report. Now, we're just going to play a little montage of how the Democrats, Senate Democrats, treated the Attorney General yesterday. What you're going to hear is the voices of Democrat Senators Blumenthal, Cory Booker, and Senator Hirono of Alaska. That's what you're going to hear. The way
it's
they
from Hawaii, right?
Hawaii. Yes, Hawaii. What did I say? Alaska.
Alaska.
No, it's Hawaii. This is a demonstration of the tone of the questioning yesterday to Attorney General William Barr. Cut number 10.
But I think history will judge you harshly.
You've not only put your own credibility into question, but seem to be giving sanction to behavior through the language you used in that press conference you held, the language.
You lied. And now we know. Being Attorney General of the United States is a sacred trust. You have betrayed that trust. America deserves better. You should resign.
Yeah, and all of this was about, they didn't like the fact that back there a few weeks ago, the Attorney General, William Barr, when he got the Mueller report, the 400-plus page Mueller report, he felt it was necessary because the public, the Democrats, were all clamoring, okay, what did they conclude? What did Mueller conclude after more than 2 years of going at this, of investigating Russian involvement in the 2016 election? Well, the Attorney General and his staff would have to read it all, 440 pages of this thing. So he felt it was a good idea to get out the conclusions, what Mueller concluded after his two-year investigation. Number one, Mueller concluded there was no collusion between the Trump camp and the Russians in the 2016 election. Mueller also did not come to a conclusion on the question of obstruction of justice, but he had the right to, but didn't, indict President Trump. In other words, he was admitting there wasn't enough evidence for him to indict the president on allegations of obstructing justice. They didn't like that Attorney General Barr said no collusion. And also, when Attorney General Barr and his Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, they looked at this and their staff and they said, we can't come up with an indictment. There's not enough evidence. Well, the Democrats went ballistic over that. Now, part of the games going on in Washington, as most of our listeners know, that the Washington Post got a tip of a letter that Mueller sent to Barr after he went public with his conclusion. And Barr made it clear yesterday he didn't call it a summary of Mueller's 440-page report. He called it a conclusion. They were upset that he put out there that conclusion. And so Mueller writes a letter to Barr saying, I'm not happy with the way the reporters, journalists, are reporting your conclusion. And he suggested, 16 pages of summaries and all that sort of thing. But the Attorney General responded to that by saying, well, I don't want to do that because that might put up more confusion out there. What I'm going to do is work hard, my staff, the staff of Mueller's lawyers, Democrat lawyers, and we're going to put out the 440-page full report for everybody to see, minus the redactions that we must by law put in this report. So that's where we were yesterday, but I think everybody understands now. The Democrats have an agenda. This is what they're planning to send forward for the 2020 election. This is their piece, that somehow Trump is still guilty of something. Yesterday, one of the Republican senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee is Marsha Blackburn. She was on Fox and Friends yesterday. And here's how she summed up how the attorney general was treated and what the Democrats are really up to. And that's cut number 12, Brent.
What we learned is that the Mueller report stands. We accept that. There was no collusion from Donald Trump and his team. We also learned, Steve, that the Democrats still can't accept that Donald Trump won. And he is serving well. He is executing on what the American people want to see done. But they're still, they can't get over the 2016 results.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah, and let me just say this, too. Now, this whole hullabaloo over the attorney general not showing up to the House to be grilled by House lawyers. First of all, the attorney general may go to Congress and report and may show up at these hearings. He's not required by law to do it. I think he's just simply being gracious for different branches of the government, in this case, the executive and the legislative, to interact. The Congress does have responsibility to the American people to exercise some oversight, although it's not superior to inferior when the executive branch is doing something. But I'm looking at an article just published, a statement basically six minutes ago from CNBC. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on Thursday accused Attorney General William Barr of lying to Congress. Said he's not telling the truth to the Congress of the United States. That's a crime, she said. Now, this is why I think Barr said no to the idea of attorneys on behalf of the House grilling him. Not only does he not have to respond to attorneys, he may respond to members of Congress, but I think he saw a trap, and I think that's why he didn't show up, because the House Democrats, and this is a conniving bunch, they are a conniving bunch of schemers. They wanted the spectacle of these attorneys not grilling Barr over the Mueller report per se, but trying to demonstrate legally that he was lying to Congress, and if he, on camera, understood what was happening and got up and left, then the Democrats could say, "See, he's a liar."
Yeah,
He didn't want to answer questions. They wanted to bait the trap. This is what Mueller did to half a dozen people in the Trump circle.
Yes,
trying to entrap somebody into a misstatement so you can prosecute this war against the Trump administration. And to Barr's credit, he smelled the trap. Shame on Pelosi and the rest of those rascals in the House. They don't care about this country. They only care about the 2016 election.
Not to mention, it's unprecedented for committee staff members to question a cabinet member.
Right.
Because that shows disrespect to the cabinet member. Even under the Obama administration and past administrations, you would never have staff members questioning a cabinet-level official, not to mention the cabinet leader or the leader for the Department of Justice. So this was Jerry Nadler knew that this was insulting to the office of the attorney general and that he wouldn't come and be disrespected like that and be put under that kind of scrutiny. But it sets it up to where it's a lose-lose. If Attorney General Barr comes and testifies, then it's a loser for him. If he doesn't, then they say, well, he doesn't want to come and be transparent.
Right, so, and there's some talk that Nadler may issue a contempt citation, contempt of Congress. So either way, they were going to try to spring this trap. And what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has said, that he has committed a crime, which is pure hogwash.
Yes, it is.
But that tells me that's what they wanted with these lawyers grilling the attorney general. We're going to try to trap you, and not only make you look bad,
yeah,
but we're going to try to trap you so that we can get you to resign and then get information to continue our campaign against the president.
And what is so hypocritical about this is Eric Holder, the House of Representatives and the Senate under the Obama administration wanted Eric Holder to come testify to committee members, and he refused. Mm-hmm. He was held in contempt of Congress because he refused to come and testify before the committee. And but Democrats were nowhere to be found.
Right.
Telling Eric Holder, you had to come, you need to come. In this case, they're telling William Barr, you have to come. Mm-hmm. And William Barr is willing to come. He actually put out the invitation or the offer to come voluntarily to yesterday and today. But the Democrats are pulling these shenanigans.
He said, I'll come and talk to you, the people's representatives.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to come talk to a bunch of lawyers.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't blame them. And this is all a show.
Yes.
This is a Potemkin village, mm-hmm. and the Democrats are all about theater, mm-hmm. and they're not about substance when it comes to this, because, frankly, at this point for the 2020 election, they've got nothing except we hate Trump.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, I think, and this is the last thing, I know I've said a lot on this, but I think Democrats are beginning to legitimately fear Barr, because now they see he's a straight shooter.
Yes.
Between his testimony, he said, and we'll probably cover this, that I've opened a criminal investigation into multiple leaks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Felony leaks that happened before I got here.
Yes.
He also said, I have a whole team, an entire team, looking into the origins of the Russia investigation and whether there was corruption there.
Yes.
And I think Clinton's allies on Capitol Hill, the Democrats, Jerry Nadler, Pelosi, they're all shaking in their boots because they're thinking, this guy might actually hold us accountable.
And what's interesting is this is a repeat of what the Democrats did regarding Russia. Hillary Clinton et al., okay, all of the, you know, she was for a while she's running, the flag bearer to replace President Obama. She was the one, and the Democrats were the ones, who actually colluded with the Russians.
Yes.
Yes.
They turned it around and accused President Trump of the collusion to hide their own conniving ways. Mm-hmm. And now they're going after Barr to try to discredit him as a liar and a schemer and not to be trusted, when the truth of the matter is William Barr is going to prove that some of them are the ones who can't be trusted.
Right.
I think the Democrats right now are trying to put up as much smoke as they can, because within probably 2 weeks, Michael Horowitz is going to come up with his report. And that report is going to...
This is the Inspector General?
This is the Inspector General.
Is it Michael Horowitz? Is that his name?
Yes.
Michael, okay.
He is going to come out with his report with regards to actually what the FBI and the DOJ were doing in the summer of 2016. He's going to look into Peter Strzok's role and his girlfriend, Lisa Page, and how much they hated Trump. The fact that Strzok was put in charge of the Clinton investigation when he was all in. He wanted Hillary Clinton to be the next president, and he didn't want Donald Trump to be the next president. Michael Horowitz is going to talk about this now famous dossier. Where did this come from?
This is going to, I think this is going to be huge.
Oh, it's going to be absolutely. And how did that dossier end up being a critical point to go before the FISA court to get permission to spy on people who work for Donald Trump?
Right.
So this is all coming out in the next couple of weeks. It's going to make the Democrats, and I think it's going to go up the chain well beyond the FBI head. Well, I think it's going to involve the then Attorney General Loretta Lynch, and it could go as far as the Oval Office, Barack Obama.
Might go to Comey as well. I mean,
we
have no idea how widespread this scheme was.
Uh-huh.
But this is going to get very interesting.
Yes.
And I think the Democrats are in for a train wreck, because it's going to become clear that they are blowing smoke to try to cover their own tracks.
Exactly. I can hardly wait for that report to come out.
You know, this is not looking good for the Democrats at all. This might get their base. Their base might like this, but everybody else doesn't. Because Robert Mueller leaking, let's remember, Robert Mueller, or someone that he approved of that letter being leaked. That letter he wrote to William Barr about, you know, your summary didn't cover the full context and substance, blah, blah, blah. That was leaked.
Yes.
So either Mueller leaked it or somebody on his staff leaked the letter.
Yes, to the Washington Post.
Because the only people that had the letter was the DOJ and the DOJ, meaning Robert Mueller, who's part of the DOJ, and William Barr. These were letters, private communications. Mm-hmm. Someone leaked it. I think Mueller or someone on his staff leaked it for political purposes, which is indicative of the whole Robert Mueller investigation.
Yeah. By the way, yesterday, the Attorney General Barr made the point, because that letter was leaked. The letter that Mueller wrote 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, mysteriously shows up at the Washington Post before the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday. Well, William Barr, the Attorney General, filled in some points on that. After he got the letter from, he called him Bob.
Right.
He knows Bob Mueller.
Yeah.
I got the letter from Bob. He couldn't figure out why Bob didn't just pick up the phone.
Right.
So William Barr, the Attorney General, and his staff give Bob a call and say, okay, what's going on here? Exactly what are you saying in this letter?
And Barr said, frankly, the letter was a little snitty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was a little snitty.
Yeah.
Now, according to Barr's testimony yesterday, Mueller said he didn't have a problem with the conclusions that Barr came to, that he was upset with the media coverage. So Barr filled in some things yesterday that, Washington Post didn't talk about.
But also, we have to remember, William Barr called Bob Mueller and said, hey, basically, I'm paraphrasing, would you like to come look at my four-page letter before I send it?
Yes.
Yeah. Guess what Mueller said? No, thank you.
Yeah.
So Robert Mueller cannot complain about the letter, the four-page letter, when Barr said, come read it and offer your feedback.
Now, tell me what I'm missing here. When Nancy Pelosi says that the Attorney General has lied to Congress, am I missing something? The only thing that he's being accused of lying about is saying that Mueller did not have a problem with the conclusions that he put out. Is that what they're accusing him of lying about?
Were you reading this Politico article?
I guess it was
this Politico article.
No,
says,
this is CNBC that I was looking at.
Okay, this Politico article says that Nancy Pelosi's basis for saying that William Barr is lying is that he told the House committee last month that Mueller had no problems with the four-page summary. And they're saying, well, he did have problems with it, and you knew it. So, yes, that's it.
That's the thing that they're talking about him lying about.
Yes, that's it.
I mean, that is, first of all, that's not an objective fact that Congress could possibly know about. Mm. I mean, who is Nancy Pelosi to know what Barr meant by Mueller not having a problem with it, especially since Mueller has come out and said, I didn't have a problem with your conclusions, just the way the media was talking about it.
Right.
And that he refused the offer to come and take a look at it before it was released.
Yes.
I don't understand what the Democrats... I thought I must be missing something.
No.
Well, I know I'm missing something. I'm missing a good night's sleep every night. That's what I'm missing. Well, you know, we're going to take a short break. We're going to take a deep breath, maybe go get bottle of water, a little bit of popcorn, folks. Go get a quick sandwich, quick bite to eat. Because when we come back, yes, we're going to talk about more of what's happening in D.C. and elsewhere, because you just can't get enough. Now, we're happy to keep you informed about what's happening from a Christian perspective. You are listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're going to take a short break, and then we will be back with more. Please join us.
On the next Today's Issues.
Walker Wildman is handling our Facebook presence in the world.
Yeah, if you have a Facebook account, just type in Today's Issues in your search bar, and then our page will pop up. And you can watch the show there every day, or you can view all the articles that we talk about.
Right, but you can also be our friend.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Judy Goodell and her husband set up a charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation.
What we love about it is that it represents stewardship principles that we feel strongly about. So we got very, very excited about this opportunity.
With a charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation, an AFA supporter can guarantee a permanent monthly income, as well as supporting the American Family Association for years to come.
We do feel convicted about really praying about all that God has really blessed us with. And so many people we know just want to leave it all to their kids. And we know the danger of that. And so we just are really just trying to pray through it. And God gave us great confirmation as we prayed that this would be a good use of the Lord's money.
Find out if a charitable gift annuity is right for you at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or email foundation@afa.net.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A lesson south of the border. That story coming up. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. Venezuela was once a land of freedom and opportunity, but socialists have turned it into a land of squalor. The people live in fear of a dictator. There are no jobs, no clean water, no electricity. People on the verge of starvation, forced to eat their family pets. This is the socialist utopia spoken of by people like Senator Bernie Sanders. Venezuela's real-life socialist nightmare should serve as a warning to freedom-loving Americans. 7 years ago, the Maduro regime outlawed private gun ownership. In other words, only the army and the police have weapons. The right to bear arms is necessary for a people to be free. The fact is, it takes a good guy with a gun to stop a bad guy with a gun. But in Venezuela, only the bad guys have guns. And at the end of the day, the American military may be the good guys that save the day. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. I'm joined in studio by Walker Wildman and Fred Jackson. All right, Fred, after we got our listeners just chomping at the bit for more, I know what's coming. They don't know what's coming. What is the next story?
The next story. Well, as most people are aware, there are now 20 Democrats who say they would like to be the next president of the United States. In the single digits, as far as the latest polls, is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, Pete Buttigieg,
I think you just got, as long as you just kind of run all that together at the end, I think
okay.
You're safe.
Because you're going to hear about him so much, because instantly, even though he's down the list, he's well behind Sanders and he's well behind
Biden,
Elizabeth Warren, Biden. He has become a media darling already.
Right.
To that point, we learned just an hour ago, he is an open homosexual.
No, we knew that part already.
Yes. But he appears with his, quote, husband on the latest edition of Time magazine that's coming out. I'm not sure if it's on the stands yet, but it's coming out. And the headline is First Family, it has some other things under
it. It says, the unlikely, untested, and unprecedented campaign of Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah. So he makes the cover of Time magazine.
Right.
Now, that tells you a lot, folks. First of all, as I say, he's becoming a media darling. One of the other things is that, of course, and we covered this story back several days ago, he's very critical of people who say homosexuality is a sin.
Yes, he claims to be a Christian.
Yes, and that God made him.
And he has said that his homosexuality has brought him closer to God.
Yes. Now, this is what Time magazine says of him. To some Americans, Buttigieg may just be the man to vanquish America's demons, end quote. So, they love this guy. They think it would be absolutely wonderful to have a first family of two homosexuals in the White House.
Yeah, and our folks and others are just going to have to get used to this because he is a media darling.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very bright man. I think he's a pretty good speaker. I think I've only heard him on occasion. I've not heard a whole stump speech. And nobody loves the homosexual movement and the entire sexual revolution more than the Democratic Party and the secular progressive left.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying that he has a chance to get the nomination. I think Biden and Bernie Sanders will probably slug that out.
Mm-hmm.
But he will probably be in the primary season mm-hmm. for quite a while until it becomes apparent that he can't. Now, nobody knows what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Biden and Sanders could both stumble, and then it'd be wide open.
Mm-hmm.
But here, you know, the homosexual movement, and again, I say the sexual revolution because the homosexual movement is simply the latest iteration of the sexual revolution. This goes all the way back to the 40s and 50s in this country. The 60s is when it exploded into the public awareness publicly.
Mm-hmm.
This has been going on for a long time. So the sexual revolution, that's why you have so many people in our country who are heterosexuals who support the homosexual movement because they want their sex too. They mm-hmm. want their immorality just like everybody else. So we're not going to put up any kind of standard by which we judge homosexuality because I like my heterosexual sin too.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, to me, the biggest danger of Pete Buttigieg is that he claims to be a Christian, that God made him this way, and that his homosexuality has made him closer to God. He took it upon himself to go after Vice President Mike Pence's Christianity and anyone who says homosexuality is a sin.
Mm-hmm.
And in response to that, Franklin Graham, for example, tweeted that being gay is, quote, something to be repentant of, not something to be flaunted, praised, or politicized, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be an issue that is going to further divide the evangelical community.
Yes.
And that, to me, is the biggest danger here, but also the fact that our country continues to hurtle down the pathway of sexual destruction. And his candidacy and the fact that he's on Time Magazine, mm-hmm. a media darling, greatly concerns me about the moral degeneracy of this country.
Yep. All right. Perhaps on another avenue from the Democrat campaign is Kirsten Gillibrand. She's senator from New York. Now, part of the Democrats, they think that you hear this over and over again, that the Republicans benefit from big money, all right?
Right.
They have all the billionaires in the country all donate to the Republican Party. If you listen to the Democrats,
right.
For some reason, they don't mention George Soros, who I think exclusively donates to Democrat candidates. Anyway.
Also on occasion, donates money to evangelical groups who support open borders.
Yes, we need to do a whole program on that someday.
That's exactly right.
Senator Gillibrand, she's come up with an idea, and she calls it democracy dollars. It's almost like a game show. Democracy dollars.
This is crazy.
Here's your game show host, Senator Gillibrand. Here's her proposal. Stand by, folks. Your taxpayers' dollars. $600 of your taxpayers' dollars would go to every voter in America. She'd give you a voucher, and you could vote for whoever you want.
You could give the money to.
Give the money to whoever, whatever political candidate, and that way that would keep big money being an influence, according to Democrats, being an influence over the election. So you get a $600 voucher, and you give it to whomever you want, whatever political candidate you want. As some people have pointed out, and we have a comment on this. Stuart Varney, a Fox and Friends business, he's with the Fox Business Network. He was on Fox and Friends this morning. Here's his take on Gillibrand's democracy dollars, cut number 11.
What she's trying to do is to get big money out, private money out of elections, and at the same time get socialists elected, because that's who she thinks will take the money and vote for socialists, get the socialists in using taxpayer money. I just can't imagine that this will fly. That's giving money, buying vote. It is ridiculous.
Just imagine that for a second. Writing checks, you know, writing vouchers to everyone to then turn around. And he's exactly right. Stuart Varney's right. This is the way to turn America into a socialist nation. Give people money, a voucher to vote for. Who are you going to vote for?
Well, here's the thing. There have been calls for public financing of campaigns since the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what those kinds of ideas state is private money can't always be tracked. It's big money. It's very influential. It is corrupting the political process. We need to publicly finance campaigns, political campaigns, to limit the amount of money that's spent and make sure that big corporations or what have you have to stay out. So I haven't read the fine print of this plan. My expectation is that some people would say all private donations are out. You can only spend your voucher. And you're limited to $600. Now, the problem with that, you know, I might be willing to talk to someone about that idea. It would greatly reduce the amount of money in campaigns and the amount of money that is spent on campaigns. Here's the problem. The Supreme Court has already ruled that that's unconstitutional. You can't ban people. You can't ban corporations.
Citizens United.
From giving. That's right. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court has already ruled. So my expectation is this is being presented, Walker, as a way to quote-unquote get big companies and big money out of the political process, when Gillibrand knows that's not going to happen. She just wants to add federal money to the campaigns of Democratic candidates.
Yeah, as much as I do agree that the corporate cronyism and the corporate welfare, the circle where the government subsidizes companies, companies turn around and fund campaigns, the same politicians that enact the corporate welfare policies, all that is a problem. I would agree. But using government welfare, giving my $600 to a left-wing Democrat without my, this is almost like the forced union dues.
Yes.
This is almost like the forced union dues. Everybody pays into the pot. Well, as a matter of fact, not everybody pays into the pot, because the people who don't pay taxes, they're going to get their $600 voucher, whether they pay taxes or not, according to Gillibrand's idea. This is just a horrible idea. $600, everybody gets a voucher. It's not the government's job to start meddling into campaign finance in the sense that the government is giving money to campaigns.
Yes.
You know, I understand there needs to be regulations on campaign finance, but this is welfare. And then another thing is, where do we draw the line? Do we, as far as funding, public funding of campaigns, what if there are 50,000 candidates? Do they each get a $100,000 budget?
Well,
you see what I'm saying? Where does the line draw?
I think I'm guessing that each person gives to whomever they want. Now, let me just ask you guys this. I respect both of you. I think you're common sense guys. All right. What could go wrong with the government giving $600 vouchers to people who really don't care about the political process to begin with?
Yeah.
You think I might come to you, Walker, and say, hey, I'll give you $25 if you'll spend your voucher with this candidate over here. Mm. Now, the $600 voucher is in the hands of a person maybe who's never voted before, doesn't really care about the political process. Absolutely. Now you've got an individual, me, going around my neighborhood and spreading seed money and basically harvesting those vouchers and sending them to my candidate of choice.
Here's what's going to happen. If the government gets their hands in funding campaigns for public office, they will immediately or soon thereafter start regulating who qualifies for the voucher.
Of course.
You right-wing haters do not qualify. You Roy Moore in Alabama do not qualify for the voucher because we cannot fund right-wing bigotry. I'm speaking tongue-in-cheek here, but that's it.
And guess who qualifies? Gee, do you have a driver's license? Yeah, I got a driver's license.
You get a voucher.
You get a voucher. Oh, not in the country legally.
Right.
All right. And just to your point, here's what happens also. We want to let you know whose idea this was, that you get a $600 voucher. It was your friends in the Democratic Party who are going to let you stay here forever and give you amnesty. So where are you going to spend your $600 voucher?
That's why I say, what could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with this idea? Well, and I'll just say this. This may be unfair, but this is where I've gotten. If Kirsten Gillibrand came up with it, it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
If a Democrat came up, if a left-wing, secular, progressive came up with this idea, it's going to eventually undermine the Constitution.
Because all of their other ideas have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. We have with us our one of our normal kind of guests to the, not really a guest to American Family Radio, but on today's issues, Alex McFarland. When he is not traveling like 300 days out of the year, like he normally does, if he's not on the road going somewhere, he comes on with us to today's issues. He's obviously, for those of you who have listened, an author, apologetics expert, a fantastic speaker, co-host of Exploring the Word with Bert Harper, heard weekdays on American Family Radio at 3 p.m. Central Time. Alex, rock star status, good morning.
10 years ago, I couldn't spell Arthur, and now I are one.
Well, you have done well in 10 years, I can tell you that. Well, welcome to the program, Fred. What we talked about a couple of issues we're going to try to pitch to Alex, get his take on it. If we have time, we'll cover both. What's the first one?
Alex, one of the stories that we have on One News Now today comes from the Associated Press. Here's the headline. Holocaust survey exposes gaps in Austrians' knowledge. And basically, a New York-based Jewish group has done a survey on what Austrians know about the Holocaust. The numbers absolutely shocked me. 56% of Austrian respondents did not know 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. 36% believed 2 million or fewer were killed, a belief that rose to 42% among younger people aged 18 to 34. And to answer my next question, okay, where does the United States stand in all of this? The CEO of this Jewish group, the New York-based Conference on Jewish Material Claims Against Germany, they said the numbers are very similar in the United States and Canada, but he says they're shocking because Austria, among other things, was a place for one of the concentration camps for Jews during World War II. Now, how do you explain that such a large percentage of people in a country that was one of the pivotal points of the Holocaust, they don't even know that 6 million Jews died there? World War II is not that long ago. It really isn't. How do you explain this, Alex?
Well, it's explained by secular progressive revisionist education. And, you know, I read this, and it does make my heart heavy. It reminds me of the very famous quote by Santayana that says, "Those who do not learn history are doomed to repeat it." And, you know, on this National Day of Prayer, I am speaking, doing interviews, and I'm calling people, yes, to pray, but to understand and to be conversant on American history. Our rich history, steeped in Christianity, and to know our history, and to know, like you say, World War II history, because the movie, Ed and Fred, did you guys see the movie Darkest Hour about a year ago, where Gary Oldman portrayed Winston Churchill?
I have not seen it.
I saw that. It's a great movie.
It was a gripping movie, and I'm reading a book right now, How Churchill Saved the World. And, you know, we know God did it, but and there was collaboration from a number of good people, the United States, Great Britain, largely championed by Churchill. But we need to understand history and how really it has been a biblical worldview. It has been belief in moral absolutes and people of conviction. Individuals that we're sufficiently moved by God to stand up to tyranny, to stand up to evil, to stand up to the murderous regimes like the Third Reich and Hitler and Hirohito that have kept the world safe. And I've got to say, on this National Day of Prayer, one of the foundational points of a civilized society is that we value human life. We view life as sacred, made in God's image. And so that stat about Austria is disconcerting, but I would beg, at a time when secular education champions atheism, Islam, and homosexuality, my goodness, how about we tell young people the truth about God, about morality, about life, marriage, family, and yes, our history, lest we fall into centuries of dark ages and millions of souls be lost. Hmm. And so on this National Day of Prayer, there's so much that we need to be in prayer about, but hopeful and encouraged, knowing that God does hear the prayer of his people, and God will respond if we turn to him.
Alex, let me ask you this. It boggles the mind. I certainly agree that secular progressive or secular regressive revisionist history that's being taught, things aren't maybe even not even being taught to begin with. But it doesn't seem to make sense other than to explain it by the nature of spiritual warfare, to understand why Europeans, especially in Austria, you know, annexed by Nazi Germany, mm-hmm. and as Fred pointed out, the site of at least one concentration camp, why Austria would not teach about the Holocaust. Is spiritual warfare and the devil's hatred of the Jewish people, which you would guess is the primary reason for that?
That's part of it. You know, Austria had a rich Christian history, as did Germany. A couple of years ago, my wife and I had a German exchange student come and live with a person we went to church with, and we spent a lot of time with this German college student who did not know who Martin Luther was. And this was an exchange student that was brilliant. Actually, we were able to lead him to Christ while he was here in the States. But, think about it. One of the most important figures of history, Martin Luther, 1571, and this college student that was, you know, very well educated on a number of subjects, but did not know. Now, he did know about the Holocaust and that, but, you know, what's interesting is Germany, the cradle of the Reformation, and we're here today because of what God did through Luther and out of Germany and the recovery of the gospel. But 200 years after Luther was the birth of liberal theology, Schleiermacher, 200 years after Schleiermacher were the ovens of Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. And so when a culture has spiritual amnesia and the gospel is ignored, then forgotten, into that vacuum created by the absence of Christianity, something will come, and that thing will be dark. If America doesn't have a great spiritual awakening, the vacuum created by the loss of Christianity will be tyranny and death. And it's only the Spirit of God that can reverse that tide. Mm. There are hints that there might be an awakening of the gospel happening in parts of Europe, but let's pray and beg God that an awakening of the gospel and a revival will begin here in America before we fall any farther than from the place we are.
Amen. Hey, Alex, this is Walker. One more question about this spiritual revival, spiritual renewal discussion. Could it be, you know, historically it seems that in past revivals, we really didn't know, the church really didn't know we were having a revival until after the fact. Could it be that at some point America starts to have a spiritual revival and, you know, Christians may not really understand it, we still think our country's going in the wrong direction, and then maybe we look back 30 years later and see how God worked?
Yeah, I think so. Walker, that's a great point. The Jesus movement of the late 60s, roughly 68 to 75, A lot of people, and myself included, would say that was a great awakening. Now, at the time, a lot of the mainstream church kind of pushed back against the Jesus movement, but we look back and we see, wow, Greg Laurie came out of that, Josh McDowell, Chuck Swindoll, you know, a lot of great work. Henry Blackaby of Experiencing God said, find out where God is working and go in that direction. I believe a revival is being ignited. I mean, look at the incredible reach of American Family Association. And last week's Share-a-thon was a God moment. And folks, to everyone listening, I want to say the Lord's doing a lot of great things. God's raising up young people that are overwhelmingly pro-life. I mean, I even met a group called Secularists for Life, and they need Jesus. But they are pro-life young people because you can't argue with the 3D sonograms, you know.
Right.
And so between AFA and between what God is doing to awaken the moral sensibilities of many young people, I really believe, to your point, Walker, that there is an awakening happening, and let's make sure that we are participants in it and not look. It's great when people look back and they retrospectively say, wow, that was something God did. But let's not just know about it after the fact. Let's participate with it in the moment. Because God still cares about the souls of people, and God still cares about America.
Alex, going to give you just a minute or two. That's all we got left in this segment. I just want you just to speak to our listeners, encourage them about the National Day of Prayer, but also I know you've been kind of doing that here during this segment, but just encourage them to continue on in the gospel and in prayer. So the floor is yours.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm at Fayetteville, North Carolina, right on the doorstep of Fort Bragg. We've got a major event this weekend, Truth for a New Generation at Rockfish Church. You can find out at truthfornewgeneration.com. Josh McDowell's coming, Mark Middleburg. But here's the thing, folks. On this day of prayer, Luke 18:1, Jesus said that we ought to always pray and not give up. So let's intercede for our nation. Let's do the work of prayer because it does make a difference.
Amen. Well, Alex, thank you so much. And folks, pray for this weekend for what Alex is going on. Alex, where can people go to find out more information if they have heard about this for the first time? Can they sign up? I mean,
And it's free. No admission. It's
okay.
Free. Now, if you can bring some cans of food for the military, well, that's great. But go to truthforanewgeneration.com, and we'd love to see you in Fayetteville.
And folks, if you can't go, visit the website and learn a little bit about it so you can pray this weekend for a move of God. Alex, thank you so much again for being on the show. But really, brother, thank you so much for your heart for God and for America and its people. And God bless you this weekend.
God bless you all. We hope to see you soon. Thanks.
All right. That's Alex McFarland. He's co-host of Exploring the Word with Bert Harper, heard weekdays on American Family Radio at 3 p.m. Central Time. And those of you who know Alex know he is much more than that. Just guy's a whirlwind of activity on behalf of the kingdom of God.
So. Amen.
All right, folks, you are listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're going to take a five-minute break for news. And when we come back, Steve Jordahl, reporter and news anchor for American Family News, will be joining us with more information about what is happening. Fred Jackson, thank you so much for being with us.
You bet.
All right, folks, Ed Vitagliano and Walker Wildman, we are your co-hosts. We'll be back after the five-minute break. Please join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.